Yes, I. This song is called Be the Change. Inspired by the words of Mahatma Gandhi, who lived for peace and not violence, and told us to be the change we wish to see in the world. Freedom's calling, I feel the fire that's deep inside us. Everybody wants change, but tell me who will guide us. To the leaders that pass away, put up your lighters.
Open your eyes and looking out at the world and trying to figure out what the hell is really going on. Well, I tell you what, I think you've come to one of the good places to find some of that information out. Ramon and I here at the 100th Monkey Radio are doing our best to bring you some of the cutting-edge speakers, authors, presenters, etc., etc., etc. out there that are sharing this truth in the apocalypse that we are now going through, the unveiling. So, man, what an exciting time to be alive, isn't it, Ramon?
Yay! Yes, it's quite exciting, and a lot of things are happening out there, many weird things. But I want to thank everybody who's become a member. And thank you so much for supporting us and helping us out. And if you're not a member yet, you can go over to www.thehundredthmonkeyradio.com. And it's highly appreciated. And this helps it helps out the show. And I promise we're not buying Lamborghinis with the membership. Oh, what I mentioned, the music you just listened to is by the Luminaries, and it's called Be the Change.
Yes, good stuff. Some good stuff. Check out the material. We've got some links on the site. And
yeah, for their websites, and if you like the music, you can get it on their website. Amazing. Finally, a music group that really speaks to what's happening.
Yeah,
these guys sound really awake.
Definitely got their finger on the pulse with it.
Yeah.
So tonight with us, we have somebody that most of you will be familiar with already through the BBS Broadcasting Corporation or
family.
Family or whatever we want to call them. We've got Lance White with us tonight. He's a famed and gifted psychic healer, author, and exceptionally adept practitioner of question-triggered channeling. You will probably know him better by the name of Zany Mystic. And if you've ever listened to any of his shows, you understand exactly why they call him Zany, because he is so fun. So fun. So, Lance, how are you doing tonight?
I'm terrific, Tom. Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah, this is great to have you on. I've almost completed reading your book, and wow. I think we mentioned before we started recording tonight that I think Ramon mentioned that, wow, you must have had some really boring lifetimes in the past, because this one is like puts the icing on the cake.
And you know what's funny, Lance, that by looking at your picture, your picture now does not – you can't judge a book by its cover, because you just look like a regular – guy, you know, you don't look like the kind of guy who lived the kind of life that you have.
Well, I guess that's a compliment.
I'll
take it as such.
I'm sure it was put that way.
Yeah, it's not meant to be insulting, but it's just I was shocked with a lot of the things. So it's It's really fun book, and you're a really good writer because it keeps you involved in the book. And you go through the motions with what you're going through at the time while you're reading the book. So, and that takes a really good writer to do that.
So, Lance, I'd like to start the questioning out with going into what triggered you to start looking into the more esoteric side of life.
Well, that's pretty simple. I was born empathic, and when I was a little baby, my family's friends were all kind of wild and crazy people. They were tarot readers and astrologers, and they would drive up to my hometown of Santa Barbara from Hollywood, and that's where my parents met and quote fell in love, if you can call it that. So I was raised in kind of a C version of anti-MAME. And so I was empathic, and my dad would pick me up, and he was the only one who couldn't handle me. I'd start screaming and crying and pushing him away. And I found out later why this was. It didn't make any sense for about 30 or more years. But as an empathic baby coming in, I was clean from the other side, a clean slate. And I was picking up his confusion and turmoil about his own sexuality. And he wanted a boy to teach and to train, but he also had very confusing sexual identity issues. He was bisexual, more or less. And my mother was, I would say, more leaning towards being a lesbian than being straight. She basically just liked to party and have a good time and have good sex. And, you know, that's been going on since anything has existed, because everything has to exist through some kind of interaction that is pleasurable, or nothing would exist. So, go ahead. Were you asking me that question again? Because I got off on a tangent.
Well, I just wanted to know what triggered you into looking into the esoteric side of life.
Oh, the esoteric side. Okay. So I've always been curious about what's behind everything. From talking to invisible friends, to just always wanting to delve deeper. And being an outcast, I never understood why I was an outcast. I just knew I was an outcast. I never fit in. My parents would send me off to grade school in sandals, and they were kind of bohemians. And it was like I just cringed walking to school because I was the only kid that wore sandals. Everybody else had Tom McCann zippered boots. Why couldn't I wear those? And I had hand-me-down pants that were too short with white socks. My mother would take dippity-doo and put it on my hair and a little spit and kind of do curls. I mean, it was just humiliating for a child, you know. And I wish that gangly – I was cute as a baby. I mean, that was adorable, blonde hair and all the rest. But as I got to be in grade school, I went through that gangly phase, you know, where you're just so homely and so unattractive and everything's bulging out at the wrong places. And, you know, so I was really insecure as a kid, and all the other kids were, you know, more masculine and more secure within themselves. They had normal upbringings, I guess, and they just were secure in playing games and sports and ridiculing each other and slapping each other around. Well, I didn't like any of that stuff. So I pretty much retreated into my own world, and that has been the way it's been ever since. Now, I got very curious about the hidden side of life, having read a great deal of literature on psychology. And when I was in my teens, I was reading Sigmund Freud and Jung and the rest of it, and studying, metaphysics and the rest. And my grandparents were Masons, so they had the works of Manly P. Hall on the shelves.
Wow.
Exactly. And they didn't talk about their beliefs or their, you know, the Masonic structure or anything, but they were both in it. My grandmother was a member of the Morning Star, the women's version. So they were quite wonderful teachers. They taught by being an example. They didn't teach by telling me how it should be. And when I was bored, I used to go through these books and look at, you know, the pictures on Egypt. I don't know if I was a very good reader, but I was reading quite adamantly, even as a kid, mysteries, you know, the Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew. And I was always curious about, you know, mysteries. And so this translated all my life into digging beyond the seen and the known. And it ultimately led me to join an esoteric school studying the ideas of Gurdjieff and Uspensky. And I'll kind of stop there and let you guys catch up with
me. So was that was the fourth way school?
Yes, yes. When I first read the In Search of the Miraculous by P.D. Uspensky, I fell in love. I just was completely enamored with the mystical way and finding a teacher and a school. And of course, they point out in that book that the only way man can complete himself is by having a teacher who's conscious. And so I heard the calling, and I chose a school. And, you know, as I write in the book, you should be more careful about choosing a school than you would doing your shopping at the grocery store. And yeah. I just took the first one that came along, being naive and foolish. And I've always played the fool in the tarot deck. And I step on the lily pad, and sometimes it's a landmine, but I've never blown my leg off yet.
Yeah.
So I was with them for about 4 to 5 years, studying the ideas of consciousness, raising consciousness, and the main idea that Gurdjieff brought forth was that we are born to complete ourselves, where we have the potential to become conscious and complete ourselves, but we have to do the work. And that made a lot of sense to me at the time, and it still does.
So this was your early 20s, right?
Yes, yes. And in between there, I got married and divorced. So I dabbled with, heterosexuality for a while. And I guess that was another area that I was just completely naive to for myself. Everybody else knew that I had a proclivity towards at least being bisexual. And as it turns out, I was actually gay. I did not know that. You know, it was like I was the last person to find out. Everybody else saw the handwriting on the wall, but I had to get married and live with my wife before that. And we had a good relationship, and we were best friends before that, and we have remained good friends all of these years. In fact, I'll be returning to my hometown of Santa Barbara on December 9th and I'm actually writing with one of my guests, Anelia Benz. And I'm going to attend the meet and greet on the 11th, which is being held in Santa Barbara. So this is kind of...
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Oh, it's such a miraculous opportunity for me to spend time with one of my very favorite people in the whole world. And also to to see my ex-wife. And she's in her late 60s now. She's had a very difficult life. And take her out to dinner and see the house where I was born. And I mean, now I'm just so jazzed about it. I can't wait to take that trip. I really need to get out of the town for a couple of days and have a change of perspective.
Yeah. Do you still agree that that you need to find a teacher in order to grow spiritually?
No. I think that is we each have a different path that we've kind of tentatively laid out or sketched out, let's say, in the soul cosmic blackboard with the various possibilities that we could go down, various roads. And I think that it was important for me to go through that process and to be disillusioned and discover that the teacher was certainly quite fallible, he was human, and that it's not my destiny or my path or desire to continue being empowered through someone else. At this time, I feel that the energies have shifted sufficiently that we are capable, fully capable, of going within and discovering the God, Goddess, all that is, the bright star, the ball of light that we are, and pull that light out, as George Kavassalis likes to tell us, share with us, to pull that light out. And it's the first time I've ever heard someone publicly speak of this. Many people talk about, you know, the violet flame and pulling in the ascended masters and the rest of it, and he says, no. And I agree with him 1,000%. Trust yourself, go within, connect with your own intuition, and you're fine. You know, we are sovereign beings, and it's just a matter of peeling away all that is not.
It's all there, isn't it?
Say that again?
It's all in there, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. And the funny thing is, I've said this for years, and I didn't understand it, and I still don't completely understand it. But everything is in us, literally everything. The whole creation is within the smallest particle within us. And so you could take a nanobot. Well, that's a bad example. An organic nanoparticle from our holographic being, from our bodies, and you could literally create all this, you know, with all of its permutations and parallel realities and the rest of it. So, it's there.
I like the way Thomas Campbell puts it. He says that the only thing that is real is consciousness.
Nice.
Everything else is, he terms it virtual reality, but everything else is the manifest universe that we experience.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Very good. Very good, and there are levels of consciousness.
Mm.
And that's the rub, because as Gurdjieff pointed out, we think that we're conscious already, and that's what keeps us from being conscious. Because we already think that we're conscious, because we call ourselves I all the time, and we have a name which is central and unique, and people treat us as if we're a unique being, then we think that we are already conscious. But there are most of humanity is not awake. They are not conscious, and they only experience moments of consciousness in near-death experiences or nearly fatal car accidents or accidents, loud noises, anything that jars the being, the essence within, to awaken momentarily. And if you tell somebody that they're not conscious, they'll bristle and say, well, yes, I am. And in that moment, they will be. But the next moment, we fall asleep, and we forget that that was just a moment. And the great masters throughout the ages who have incarnated here try to remind us that you're only as good as your last moment of consciousness. I'm paraphrasing. And that is something that gets strung together like pearls with a knot in between. And the only moments that we really remember are those intense moments which represent our higher consciousness. And ultimately, yes, we are just consciousness. But some people have, some people are stringing fake pearls onto strings without knots. So when the bead breaks, they roll all over the floor and you lose your plastic pearls. Well, you know, number one, we want real pearls, the pearl, the great price, the pearl of wisdom, which Mayor Baba talks about, and you don't want to lose them all. So a wise person strings those together with intentionality and puts a knot in between. I'll tell you a funny story. When I was a little kid in Santa Barbara, my grandparents used to take us to the Baptist church, and there was a wonderful dear old soul, Mrs. Hamilton, who wore purple hats and with flowers, and she had lavender hair, and she was just the funniest. She was like something out of The Wizard of Oz, and you know, she had long cheeks and and she was just a character. And my grandparents, my grandmother was a jolly person, and my grandfather was tall and dignified. So here we are sitting in the Baptist church towards the back of the pews, and Mrs. Hamilton, her beads became undone, and there were no knots in the pearls. I guess they weren't pearls. And every one of them fell down onto the floor, and the floor was wood, and it was leaning, tilting down towards the preacher. So every one of them bounced, and the whole congregation turned around and looked at us as all these beads fell off, and boing, boing, you know, bah, 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 bah. And we had to wait about 5 or 10 minutes for them all to finally land, but it was a very funny moment, and that created memory. And those are the moments that we remember most, the moments that we are conscious but not self-conscious. We are in an observer state when we're observing from outside of ourselves.
he didn't happen to be preaching about casting pearls before swine at the time.
That could have been. That would have been perfect. Very good. We just wrote that moment. Very nice, Tom. Very nice.
One of the funny stories that I find when I was reading your book is the how you constantly find yourself in certain situations, and it almost seems like somebody was really looking out for you, Lance. What did you ever later in life get a sense what that was that was really looking out for you?
Oh yeah. Oh yes. I kind of roll all of that up into the word my team. For a long time, I was using things like my angels, my guides, my this, my that. And somebody on the show once referred to that whole package of entities, beings that are on the other side, whatever you want to call them, the higher dimensional realities that are guiding us through life. They referred to that as a team. So I thought that was a really good way to do it, because then there isn't this constant fumbling for, you know, God, goddess, all that is, angels, hierarchy. You know, you can just say my team. And I found recently that my team includes, is not exclusive. It's shifting and changing continuously. And many of my guests have their teams, and I have connected with their teams and their team's teams, and it's quite an interesting web of light. So, yes, I think that there are specific guides that come from the soul realms, the higher dimensions where we come from, and they got watch over us, because I have also heard stories from other people that have verified this, cars slowing down in a car wreck and seeing everything in slow motion and seeing hands guiding the steering wheels, and I mean impossible things that could happen with altered physics. And yeah. So, yes, I am certain. In fact, there was a certain moment when I was looking at some synchronicity in San Francisco where I was living, and I had this epiphany that this my life and those particular events it could not have happened by themselves. There was absolutely no way. And that's when our denial is pierced, and the personality that we've created to interact with life kind of gets shattered. And I consider that to be part of the process of awakening, when our real life personality begins to crack, and hopefully we have one that's not too invested in our being right, which is the ego part, and it is capable of being loosened up by the true personality, which is an intentional creation, which is designed to communicate from our essence. But yes, there's no question about it.
So it's like Tom's proverbial 2x4.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Which I kept thinking that when I was reading your book, because I was like, ooh, he just got smacked again. Oh, he just got hit again. Because I remember, I can't remember who the guest was. Maybe, Tom, you can remember. She was saying that on the other side, when we're ready to incarnate, we set up these buffers for ourselves.
Uh-huh.
And basically, if we don't get it that time, then we set up a situation a little worse. Okay, if we don't get it then we make the situation a little worse.
Portland, yes. Yes,
so,
absolutely right.
As I'm reading your book, I was like, wow, this guy set up a lot of buffers. He really wanted to get that. He wanted to get it right this lifetime.
Uh-huh. Well, this is my last lifetime. I'm not going to be returning here. I can't really see beyond this, but I know that I came in to assist to raise the vibration of the planet, and that I have a higher purpose, as we all do. And my name numerologically, if you spell the whole thing out and boil it down, works out to a 9, which is completion, and my birth date works out to a 9. And my book, which we're talking about, Tales of a Zany Mystic, I designed the title to work out to a 9 as well. And it was published in 2007, which is a 9. So that was all intentional on my part. And I had to sweat bullets to get it in 2007, but it was very important to me because that was, I don't know, it just, I had to do it. You know, I was told, or I was led to do that, to believe that that was really important. So for whatever reason.
You know, I think there's a lot of us here right now that are here for that same purpose. I mean, there's a lot of us. Here specifically to raise the vibration and to assist with the awakening.
Well, yes. Yeah. And one thing that I haven't discussed yet that, you know, I know that this is, can be a taboo subject for people because we don't like to discuss anything that we don't understand, and it's difficult to talk about these things even today. But I contracted HIV and in the year, actually it was 1982, I discovered recently. So that puts me in as a very long-term survivor with HIV and AIDS. So
you're
for 30 years.
Yeah, I was going to say you're actually the oldest I know.
Yeah, I
most
I
mean, of the guys I mean, that
yeah
most of the guys I know they're like 10, 15 years, but yeah, you're definitely one of the veterans.
No question about it. And, you know, so here I am after decades of partying, out living alcoholically. I mean, if I had a penny for every time I got drunk and passed out, I'd be a very wealthy man today. And then when I was 48, you know, after 10 or 11 years of continuous sobriety and then a few little slips in between with alcohol, when I was 48, living in San Francisco, I discovered methamphetamine. And so I just kind of stumbled into it, and a friend wanted to buy it, and he was getting some bad stuff, and he had AIDS. So I said, well, I'll see if I can find some that's better if you want to buy it a little above cost, and it'll pay for mine. Well, little did I know I was going to end up a major drug dealer in San Francisco out of my tiny postage stamp apartment on Potrero Hill, and that I was going to end up moving pounds of this shit and so you know, and shooting it up. I mean, who would have thought, you know, middle class white boy, and or that I would live through it. But because I had had HIV for so long, by then it was in the 20-year range, and I thought, I'm not going to live through this. There's no way. I'm going to be dead in a year or two. So I maxed out all my credit cards, bought, you know, junk, and eventually had to pay them off two or three times. This happened two or three times.
And your higher self yes. said, no, you ain't going nowhere.
Right. And I was trying, believe me. I was burning the candle at both ends. There was no stone I left unturned in that process, believe me. You can ask me whatever you want. I'll tell you the truth as long as it's not too shocking for the audience. But I think we have a pretty adult group now. You know, this is the 20th or 21st century?
21st, I think, yeah.
Okay, and I think I come from about the 25th or 6th. So, you know, all of this place is really backwards to me. I'm sure I have a... you know, an aspect of myself or more in the future, because I've always thought this was a barbaric planet, and I have only that thought has only grown with time, and it gets more barbaric every day.
Yeah. So let's dive into the HIV, because I find that very important, because I've had three friends pass away from it, and I have a few friends living with it. And so that's the part of the book that I was finding really, really hard to get through. But what would be for the person who's listening to this, who either has a friend or a family member or who themselves is living with it, what would you say to them that to get them by? Because you've been living with it for 30 some odd years. And how is it that Lance White made it to 2011 when that's almost unheard of?
Yes, exactly. And I'll tell you what the pivotal point was. There was a definite turning point for me. In the 80s, I was, you know, surrounded with death. Everybody was taking AZT. They were, you know, doctors were prescribing it in immense doses. And I finally caved in and thought, well, I'd better take it or I'll be dead. You know, so I started taking AZT at about, well, yeah, somewhere in the 80s. I contracted it in 82 through the hepatitis B vaccination study. And that's another story. I won't get into that right now. But the, around latter part of the 80s, I started taking AZT. Well, everybody was getting sick from it, and I didn't, you know, I thought, well, this is what you have to do. So I was living on Petrillo Hill and walking my friend's dog, and I was walking up the hill, and I had no energy, and I felt like an old man. I was in my 30s at that time, and I felt like I was dead. I just, there was no life force in me at all. And I couldn't summon any into my body. I couldn't call, there was no way I could rely on it. And I stopped in my tracks, walking up the hill, huffing and puffing, and thought to myself, if this is what it's like to live with HIV, taking drugs, I'd rather be dead. And I made the choice, the conscious choice at that moment, to live my life fully until I didn't, until I died. And at least I would be feeling decent. And so I went home, took the AZT, and I flushed it down the toilet. And I never took drugs again. I mean, I can't say never. I didn't take drugs again for over 20 years. I did a lot of experimental things that were underground cocktails and things you painted on your arms, and I did everything you could find through the underground media and through friends, because San Francisco was quite a hotbed of people who were researching and studying. I mean, we really, those of us who were on the forefront of this, really got down and dirty, and we used ourselves as experiments. And I continue to do that today. I'm still experimenting on myself, and my most recent experiment has been to terminate all of my medicines. And this is something we can get into later if you'd like to, but I have recently made a decision. So just to bring you up to speed, no puns intended, I stopped taking all HIV meds and for 20 years. And when I finished my sentence for dealing meth, I was pleaded guilty a second time to felony dealing. I was moving pounds of this stuff, and they caught me again. And I spent a year in a live-in home, which was a wonderful experience. And then I moved up to my house here in Placerville that my dad had left me to write the book about my experiences and my encounters with angels and how I literally was pulled out of the fire. I mean, I feel like I was just snatched out of the jaws of death again. I mean, I've had hundreds of near-death experiences. I've totaled two cars. I've overdosed with drugs. I shot up meth in the 90s, late 90s and early 2000s, and lived through all of this. And I'm sitting here talking about it, so that's nothing short of a miracle. So that tells me that I must be here to share this story, and so here I am.
Yeah, you know, we have a few very interesting parallels. I was a few years ahead of you. I was end of the 80s, early 90s when I was dealing meth. And same deal. I was dealing, started the same way. I mean, guys were getting crap, and I was like, oh,
right.
I could find some better stuff. And so I decided to be, just like you said in your book, the honorable dealer, you know, that always never cut anything, always gave them the highest quality stuff and all, you know, a good deal, you know, the best anybody could find. I made enough off of it to support my own habit, you know, and I was doing pounds also, and I got arrested.
You
seem to have had a little easier time with the court system than I did. I ended up in San Bernardino County Jail for 10 months for first time ever being arrested for anything. I guess I was being made an example or something. I don't know. But
Location, location, location.
No, I'll tell you what. That was that whole experience was one of the most rewarding times of my life as far as opening my eyes and the growth and the mystical, magical experiences that happened in there.
There goes that 2x4.
Tom is so right. I had more mystical experiences, epiphanies and awakenings and higher consciousness and connections in jail in San Bruno. I was only there for a couple of months, but I'm telling you, it was a spiritual experience.
Yes.
Bar none.
Yes.
Well, yeah. I mean, I got arrested, but not for for drug possession. I got arrested for fighting and stuff like that. But it's almost like a big squeeze that it forces you to really look. And it's funny because I got arrested with a friend of mine, and at that moment, it's not that we never became enemies. We're still friends to this day, but our lifestyles really split there because he went down one path and I went down a different path, and not saying that either one is better than the other. But that's when I really started reading books on astral projection and looking for something better. Cause I was like, this can't be it. I mean, this can't be right. What my life is going to be. You know, at that moment, I didn't know if I was going to go to jail and there were people looking for me and stuff like that. So,
over the old shoulders.
Yeah. So that's when I started suffering from acute paranoia. So yeah. I was thinking, you know, everybody's looking for me, and at times there were, and other times they weren't.
Cute about paranoia at all.
Huh?
Anything cute about paranoia at all?
It's terrible, isn't it?
I said
anybody who's done any kind of significant kind of math about paranoia.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one thing I wanted to put some emphasis on about advice to those who are now dealing with HIV, being diagnosed or having AIDS, is the important. If I had to give advice, it would be follow your own advice. And if I had not listened to myself and had followed everybody else's, like sheep, they were jumping off the cliffs, taking huge doses of AZT, and people were dying left and right. Well, they weren't necessarily dying from the, quote, dis-ease. They were dying from the high doses of medications and the lack of information and ignorance of the medical community, because their philosophy is to treat the symptoms, and they don't have the subtle awareness of a higher consciousness to understand the body's supreme intelligence and how amazing it is. If you just let it go and give it a little boost, you can heal yourself.
Yeah.
And one of the most important things, if I had to say anything about how to heal yourself, it would be, do not drink tap water. And if you have to drink water that's even spring water has inorganic minerals, drink distilled water. Because it will pull all of the inorganic minerals out of your pineal gland and your glands and your body, and it will cleanse you. And you'll find yourself attracted to different foods. So that in itself is one of the biggest clues that I found recently, and that triggered many epiphanies for me when I had Andrew Norton Weber on my show about drinking distilled water.
I got to say, for our audience out there, you need to find that. What's your YouTube channel, really quick?
Oh, yes. It's Zany Mystic Radio.
Yeah. You need to find that one. It's such an amazing show. That interview was so amazing and so much information. I mean, the guy really did his homework.
Yeah. And Chrissy McMahon, one of my guests, Diana Loopy, who wrote the book ET101, the instruction manual, and she has a website, I think it's called ET101 as well, but if you Google Diana Loopy, that's one of the funniest, most the wittiest, deepest books that I've ever read. I laughed, I howled, I was awed, I was moved. And it's ET101, the instruction manual. And she had sent me a link to this interview that Chrissy McMahon had done with Andrew Weber. They met up in South America, and he was talking about the uses of distilled water to heal the body and to remove the toxic chemicals that we're being exposed to, including the chemtrails. And in distilled water does not hold radiation. Radiation is an element that's heavier than the water, so it's removed from distilled water. So you don't even have to worry about radiation. You can go get a gallon of distilled water and drink it and wash your body out, and it's amazing the gunk that will come out of your body when you start to discover this cleanse. And, you know, Dr. Bragg, who wrote you know, so many books about health, you know, Bragg's vinegar and his amino acids and the rest of it. He's an amazing guy. And he wrote a couple of books. One is called the, it's called The Miracle of Fasting. Another one is The Shocking Truth About Water. And they're revolutionary, and they're just as vital today, if not more important, given the various attempts to dumb us down that seem to be working. And we need to take the responsibility for our own consciousness, because that's what's at stake here. Our very souls are hanging in the balance, and the soul of the planet and the soul of all that is affirming and positive. It's a battle between what's organic and real and artificial and inorganic.
Yeah, it's quite amazing, and you've opened several doors that I want to go down path, and I'm trying to choose which one to to go down. But with that being said, one of your shows, you had Jay Widener on, and you guys really got into the whole alchemy. But before, sorry, sometimes my brain jumps around. So before we get into that, I had my mother start doing the water therapy, and here in Japan I can't find distilled water, so I have to buy a distiller. But my mother is able to get it, and I had my sister. I said buy her the gallons and make sure she's drinking it. And you know, sometimes she'll do half a gallon, sometimes she'll do a whole gallon, and. She suffers from arthritis, so she's starting to let go of the arthritis pills, which is good because the ones they had her on were so highly addictive. And I was like, Mom, that's just going to turn you into a heroin addict. Because, I mean, at the kind she was taking is not, you know, it's a few notches below heroin. Yep. And I said, those things are so highly addictive. You need to be careful.
Yep.
So I'm glad that she's doing the water therapy.
Well, yes, and you know, one thing I'm learning about is that there the ancient technology of drinking your own fluids is very much alive in the countries in Asia. China and Asia, Japan are all familiar with drinking your own water, which is distilled water. And so that's how Andrew discovered the relationship between, you know, urine therapy, which is not anything shocking or new. It's been going on for thousands of years. The Romans used to pay, used to have to pay taxes to collect the urine. It was so valuable. Models use it on their faces and their bodies, and people use it for healing purposes. And, you know, that can get into a very lengthy subject. But he made the correlation of the jump, which nobody else had that I've heard, that distilled water is equally effective at cleansing the body. So no longer do we have to point our noses up at, oh, my God, how terrible, you know, to drink your own fluids. But let's think about it this way. What if the water of life was your own water. What if the Creator created a being so self-contained and so sovereign that we could walk into the desert and drink our own water, or drink each other's even? I mean, I could care less where it comes from, and live. And I believe that the 40 days and 40 nights included fasting and drinking his own urine, his own fluids. And it's, you know, the more research I do on this, the more convinced I am that this is the path that people have used for thousands of years, and it's the best kept secret on the planet.
Well, let's make another connection. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
Let's make another connection. So we have the distilling of the water, and then the body distilling itself.
Right.
If for anybody who's read the Book of Aquarius, and I recommend you guys go and read that book, which, Lance, you've read it, right? Or at least heard the audio.
Yeah.
That's the secret of alchemy right there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
Exactly.
So it's quite amazing. So what he was saying really, really, for me, put the nail in the coffin. Oh, bad use. But it really, really did it for me when he was explaining that, and then I was comparing it with the Book of Aquarius, and I was like, holy shit. I had that oh shit moment, and I was like, this guy really knows what he's talking about.
That's right.
Yeah.
I had the same epiphany, and all of my close friends have had similar epiphanies when I, out of my own excitement, I was sent the link to that radio show with Andrew Norton Weber that was on Chrissy McMahon's Bobcha's Pearls. You can Google it and find it. It's one of the episodes there. Wonderful show, wonderful interview, and I was so amazed and startled at the new information. Now, mind you, I have studied esoteric scriptures, esoteric schools. I've been in one. I have studied consciousness. I have done everything possible to raise my own, including, you know, taking LSD and ecstasy and some various other substances to connect spiritually. And I have left very few stones unturned. And when I heard Andrew talking about this, after listening to Jay on my show, in one show he was talking about the collection of dew, and that makes so much sense. Because one of my earlier guests was Jasmahine the Breatharian. And I don't want to digress onto that, but you can pull the prana from the air. That is where the positive charges are. So the dew, if it's caught before it gets to the ground, it does not lose its charge. And that's the secret of all of these technologies, is to get these fluids into ourselves and to recycle them. Before they lose their positive charge and ground themselves, because it's a magnetic thing and it has to do with the electromagnetics of the body and positive and negative polarities. Well, we are acid. Everything we take in is dead food, and the water is dead. Everything's dead. If you drink treated water from the tap, and most people listening probably don't do that. They've got water filters or reverse osmosis, and but if you do take those things in, you're ingesting 30 or 40 chemicals. To the top killers are fluoride, mercury, and then you've got barium, aluminum, and there's a list. You can Google it and find out for yourself. And you can't taste any of these things. You might taste the chlorine, but
you definitely smell it and taste it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And when you start drinking distilled water, it's soft, it's uncharged, and it relates to... You can actually intend something with that water, and it actually works. I mean, not that you couldn't with dead water, but there's a difference between waters. There are seven different types of water. And it's not just, oh, yeah, there's water, and there's water, and there's water. It is not like that. Once you open the door, you can find out that there is a big difference, and it has a different charge than the regular water we get. So the body is able to become balanced between positive and negative, and it becomes more alkaline, and that's when your psychic and empathic abilities really kick into high gear. And that's one of the benefits of doing it, besides being able to live without all of these debilitating diseases you know, fluoride being moved around in the body to places where it won't do any harm. Well, eventually it does do harm. All of these substances accumulate in the nerve endings, in the joints. And so you get up and you're sore and your back aches and, you know, you have a headache. Well, it's no wonder. We're eating dead food and we're drinking dead water. What do you expect? We're walking zombies.
And we're breathing dead air.
Yeah.
And we're breathing dead air.
Yeah, let's not forget about that. Yeah, I teach English here in Japan, Lance, and I was telling one of my students, is like, what are we doing? And he was like, huh? Because I was like, okay, so we polluted the water, we've polluted the land, we polluted the air, and we polluted the space around the earth. What the hell is wrong with us? And he just was like, I don't know. I was just like, because I'm looking at this article of what the space around the earth looks like. But anyway, sorry to go out in a tangent.
Well, it's okay because, yeah, we're in a negatively run. It's run by negative entities behind the scenes. So I don't blame the human race for our being stupid. We're just stupid because we were born slaves, and we have been since the beginning of time. There might have been a couple of golden ages. Okay, well, big deal. The whole evolution of this beautiful planet should have been one of purity and beauty and divine archetypes. It has not been that way. And this is the opportunity at this time to step up to the plate and make these course corrections. And there are going to be people that are going to go off with those who are able to fool us with false love and light. And there's a lot of that going on right now. Not all that poses as love and light is love and light. So we have to be really observant and discerning. And the best way, as I see it, is to cleanse the body so that the body can inform us through the body of the planet, through the body of the sun, and connect to the higher dimensions so that we're not drawn into the lower densities, which are battling for our attention and our focus right now.
Right.
Yeah. Lance, do you find it easier now, in this point in your life, to connect things together?
Absolutely. No question about it. I have been through some very difficult awakenings, even as recently as September. On September 27th, as a result of a direct result of listening to the shows about distilled water and following it, I went out the next day when I heard that radio show, and I bought 32 gallons of distilled water at Walmart. I was absolutely certain that this was the right path for me. It was as if my whole life had been keyed to this particular moment in time, and I was being called into service. And so I started the distilled water, and then on the 27th, I went through an amazing metaphysical, I call them altered states, a higher density consciousness. And during this time, I began journaling, and I had an epiphany to stop all medications. My HIV meds, I'm on a cocktail of three different medications. I have been for several years now, and I thank the pharmaceutical companies for making them. They have kept me alive, at least that's what I thought. And they raised my T cells, and my viral load went down to zero. Then I was taking Vicodin for pain because I was having back pain, Ativan for sleep, three different blood pressure medications, and two antidepressants.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. And because of these energy shifts that I have been going through, because I feel everything, but I hadn't been feeling them fully because I have trouble feeling these intense energies coming in. I was popping Ativan like it was candy, and I knew that it was dulling my consciousness and awareness. So on the 27th of September of this year, 2011, I sat there with my 7-day pill dispenser, and I stopped. And I figured out the numerology of it, and it was an 11-11 and 22. Anyway, it had significance for me, so I thought, okay, this is it, now or never. I'm at the edge of the cliff. I have some new wings, and I'm going to jump and see if I can fly. And if I don't fly, I'll land and I'll die and I'll go on and fly anyway. So, I mean, it's a win-win situation. If I eventually contract some kind of fatal disease from this, then that was the way I chose to take myself out. But I think that having survived so many...
Yeah, I was about to say that.
You know, that I think I can take this one jump, this one leap, and live in the question mark and with the uncertainty of death truly hanging over my head this time. Because I negate all pharmaceutical companies. I don't like what they stand for. And I don't like what they're doing. They're taking the money, and they're doing some things with it that are pretty bad. And they're killing us. So I am disconnecting from that, and I'm returning to the organic state, and I'm giving the God within, the God goddess, all that is within, the power over my body. And in that way, I am turning my life basically over to the care of God.
Yeah. So... We're coming up to the end of the hour.
Yes.
So I want to give Lance a chance. We're gonna come back on the archive in the second part. So don't worry.
Okay.
We'll have more of Lance. I want to give you a chance to say where people can find you, and where can buy the book.
Oh, good. Thank you. Well, my book is called Tales of a Zany Mystic, and it got wonderful reviews from Barbara Hanclough and Daniel Jacob, and George Kavassalis raved about it on the air when we pre-recorded the last two shows. He was just overwhelmed with praise. I mean, I was just floored. I was almost speechless. But anyway, my book is available at Amazon Books if you type in Tales of a Zany Mystic, and you can find it there at a discount or whatever. And then I have some very dear friends who started a wonderful company in Washington called WaterMeWell.com, and they are selling a version, the book, with a signed parchment by me and a personal crystal that I have blessed and charged with love and consciousness and the rest that I've owned for 10 years, and I cleansed a batch of them and sent them up there, and that's a special package that they're offering, so you can get the book signed with a personal crystal from me, at www.watermewell.com. And my radio show is a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic on Saturdays at 7 p.m. live and free. And if you want to subscribe to the archives, I would appreciate going through my affiliate link, which is at www.firesidechat.com. And you can, you know, the information is all there to find.
Well, I want to thank you for those crystals, too, with your book.
Yes.
I really appreciate them. They feel so nice.
Oh, yeah. Good. I picked. They just picked themselves out, you know?
Yeah.
They tell me. Yeah. And I just thought, you know, this is a really great idea that my friends at Water Me Well suggested it. And then I thought, well, I'm going to start doing this with all my books. I'm just going to put in an extra little present, you know, something that that can be... enjoyed and communicated with, and it's just I love it. I love doing stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're very welcome.
With the crystals I received, I the first thing was like bury them. So I bury them. I bury them right next to my plants where I grow my parsley.
Oh, good, wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. So now I have a connection with your parsley.
Yes.
And I have parsley. Yeah, and I have parsley, too, and I have some of the crystals in the parsley bed. So
there you go.
Who knows? Maybe they're talking more than we know.
Yeah, maybe they're doing their own interview now.
Exactly.
I mean, if you ever watch The Secret of Plants, yeah, you really start questioning that one. Like,
oh,
hey, what
yeah.
are you guys talking about over there?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, we are out of time here, guys, so... I want to thank everybody for listening here on BBS. Stay tuned for Brooks Agnew next, and then pop on over to the member section on the100thmonkeyradio.com and check out the second hour with Lance. We're going to get into some very interesting stuff here. So, love you guys. Condemnation without investigation is the height of ignorance, and
the love you deny is the pain you carry.
Good night, everyone.